Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to Semaphore Uncut, a podcast for developers about building great products. In this new episode, Darko, our podcast host, welcomes Richard Sirota, Google Cloud's Director of Product Management and DevRel. Richard discusses the significance of learning, the alignment of technology with business goals, and the importance of customer-oriented teams. I hope you enjoy this new episode. Now let's dive in.
Today with us, we have Richard Sirota. Richard, please just go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you for having me here. Yeah, I'm a director of product management as well as leading developer relations here at Google Cloud, and been doing cloud and technology things for 20-something years now, and I don't feel that old, but I've been in this space for a while. So it's been fun to be a vendor, be a customer, be a consulting partner. I think I've played all the different things that we deal with in IT, so at least it gives me a bizarre perspective on how it all works together.
Exciting news. Level up your CI/CD game with Semaphore. Say hello to the Game Changer, the CI/CD learning tool. It's your personalized roadmap to success. Whether you're a beginner looking to understand the basics of continuous integration or a senior engineer looking to enhance your skills, you will discover ways to improve your productivity as a developer. But wait, there's more. Introducing the Semaphore CI/CD Booster Experience. You'll be guided by our CI/CD engineers with at least 10 years of experience from day one. With this new experience, we want to provide you the fastest path to cut your costs by 50% and improve your productivity at least by a factor of 2x. Head over to semaphoreci.com for more information. And happy building.
Well, we can dive into that in a sec. So you have that unique perspective of like seeing all the news and the events and new technologies, you know, coming into the world. On one hand, on the other hand, you are speaking directly with a lot of your customers, and you know, you can see what ends up being important and what ends up being the hype and all of that. So spending, as you said, you know, that much time in the industry, what would be your overall picture? How you would explain it?
Yeah, how we think of the landscape as a whole or that perspective. Sometimes the most sustainable companies, the companies that are doing it as well for a long time, they know who they are, they know what their goals are, and technology is truly just an enabler for them. It's not who they are. It's not. And yeah, it's very hard to not watch the last trend, the next trend, and go, oh my gosh, how come I'm not using this amazing thing? My whole business is going to collapse. And there's a few times where that's maybe even true, when it's a fundamental like industry shift. And if you're stubborn and you refuse to do it, that could cost you potentially. There's other times where it's like, I don't know if everyone needs a crypto strategy right now. I think you're okay. Like, I think you'll be fine. Learn stuff. And I think what I'm a big proponent of is, gosh, to be honest with you, I've never taken the same job twice in 20-something years. And so I don't consider myself an expert at anything besides I'm pretty good at learning stuff. And at this point, I figure that's the best career strategy I could have, which is, can I learn quickly? And can I learn a lot of things? Because for any one of us, even if I hire somebody, I don't even know if I'm hiring them for what they know. I'm hiring them for how well they can learn the next thing. As I look at the whole industry, I think, are we just all getting good at paying attention, observing what's around us, understanding sometimes when something is interesting, maybe when I should hit the snooze button and let's check in on it in 6 months or 12 months. When should I adopt it now? But just how do we have this continuous learning mindset? That's the only real competitive advantage we can all have individually in our careers, I think, is how well can we learn.
And when you are going out into the world and talking to the customers and so on, what are maybe some anti-patterns that you see about this, you know, landscape in the industry? There is that that specific nature of our industry that always the newest and the shiniest things is, you know, what's drawing our attention and we want to play with it. How you see that working in practice for people you're speaking with?
So interesting how sometimes there's that disconnect between what the executives hear and see from a technology perspective they get, and then what the individuals are doing. I've seen some things recently on generative AI that say, hey, look, there's clearly individuals are using this all over the place in their companies, in their personal life, whatever. But then I'll see a data in the last few weeks of like executives think they're 1 or 2 years away from any solution that uses generative AI. No, you're not. You're probably 6 to 8 months. Like that, there's just a disconnect because you're not necessarily totally in tune with how your folks are already using some of this technology. So sometimes you have these anti-patterns of there's just a disconnect between sometimes the folks at the top and the folks doing the work. And then how are you bridging that? And then sometimes that gets bridged when I've seen folks who want to kind of cheat the trend. So look at something like site reliability engineering, even DevOps. When that stuff came out, what was the cheating way to do it? The cheating way to do it is let's take all of our sysadmins and call them SREs. That's cheating. You didn't do anything. You didn't change their work. You didn't change their goals. You didn't change their tool set. You just updated their LinkedIn profile. That does not count. And so I think sometimes we see these anti-patterns of, can I cheat it? Can I say I'm doing cloud computing when all I do is move my hypervisor to the cloud? No, you're cheating. That's not using cloud computing. Like, you're using someone else's data center. And that still may add value. But unless you're using managed services, unless you're doing things that are more composable architectures, you're building for failure, you're not doing cloud computing. You're just renting more expensive servers.
What are maybe some things that you have seen that successfully bridge that gap or in those situations of that disconnect?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think the ones that don't necessarily fall into that trap, again, have a better sense of self. Like, what are we? What are we trying to accomplish? Like, the only reason I do, you tell me, you know more than me, but the only reason I think I really do CI/CD seriously is because my goal is to deliver value to my customer faster, more reliably. Otherwise, if I can ship twice a year and everybody's happy, ship twice a year. The only reason you'd be making that change is because there's something business-wise that demands it. And so the ones who say, I don't want to just rename my team SREs. Like, I actually have a problem. I need to start running some of these platforms like products, and I need to think about operations as an engineering problem because our reliability has been terrible. Because we've acquired a bunch of companies, we have really disparate ways of operating our organization. We need to create certain standards. Like, you know why you're doing it. And you have that often with some really good technical leaders who haven't, they know enough about the technology to make some of these good choices, and they're also in an influence position. Like, when you have that sort of disconnect sometimes where the leaders of the company might be awesome, but they're really only looking from a business perspective and don't understand some of the technology piece. And sometimes when you have technology leaders who have no real concept of business, those are both dangerous. The best shops seem to have a good mix of both. IT teams that only focus on IT metrics never seem to do great because it doesn't translate. If your reason for migration is because you're on an old version of Windows, you want to get to a new version of Windows, nobody cares. If you say instead, look, we have a security issue. We want to make sure that we have a story that protects our customers. Okay, that's a good reason. That's a good reason to do a modernization as a security story. Or you're entering new markets and you have to have a different type of architecture to satisfy a global audience.
As you're building your team, can you give us some hints how you're shaping that strategy and, you know, helping people develop? Because this very close connection and understanding between the business and technology is key.
You know, a lot of the secret stuff, whether you're an IT department and a DBA, or you're someone who automates ops, or you're a software vendor, or you're whomever, there's always a customer. And even if you're an SRE, your customer may be the developer. If you're a developer, the customer may be that application team that really needs to use that product. Like, there's always a customer. And so sometimes we get in this mindset, I was in enterprise IT for 5 years. It was awesome. I was too far away from the buying customer, like the person who literally used my company's products. I was like 12 steps removed from that. I didn't feel a ton of connection to that because I didn't feel like my work impacted them. But there were other people who were my customers. If I was an architect, those application teams were my customer, or the IT team, or whatever. So I think first and foremost, you're really building teams who really think about customer outcomes, not just, hey, this is cool, let's go do this. And sometimes there's a place for that because not everyone knows what they need and they're hiring you to be creative and things like that. But you've always got to be connecting this back to, how is this making something better for someone? And that's as you're building teams. It seems like, again, the most empathetic teams, the teams that can put themselves in the other user's shoes. You and I mean, we're customers too of someone.
That's really a great explanation of that. And I do have an example, which is maybe a tangent on this, but I think it was only maybe roughly 3 years ago where we decided that, hey, we want to bring our engineers in front of the customer. We are just generally reviewing how happy are they with the product and features. It proved to really help because people really feel, okay, that's what I made. People feel about that, you know, a certain way. They really appreciate it. It's really changing their life. And then in our case, we are really happy that we as developers are speaking with our customers who are also developers. So then understanding is, you know, it's pretty easy to establish that.
Yeah, you may not always get that first party feedback. Like you said, not everyone gets to always talk to the customer, but bringing in, especially if you're a leader, your job is to help develop that empathy with your team. And sometimes that means bringing people into your all hands meetings and saying, hey, this customer just wanted to share how they're using the product, and not even just the good parts, but like, hey, by the way, this made me come in on Saturday because this was not working right. And I lost my weekend. Those are really powerful stories. Like, that impacted that human's life because of either the good thing or even the bad thing the product did. Let's make that better. And that if you don't put a face on these things, sometimes it's really easy to go, this is good enough. Let's move on to the next thing. And sometimes that's okay. But in a lot of cases, wouldn't you, if you were using that product every day, and a lot of teams should be using their own products much more often. I think you get in trouble when you're not customer zero of your own products. And even my own team in DevRel likes to call ourselves customer zero in a lot of cases because we use the product even before the customer does. And then we provide friction logs and things back to the product teams going, not good enough. Like this is not going to be a good enough experience. Our customers deserve better. I think, and then, so our engineers should be using our own products, yours probably too. Cause if you don't use it, you might be like, yeah, this is fine. Yeah, it's hard to troubleshoot this, but it's not a big deal. How did you handle it? Did it keep you after work one day? Did it blow 3 hours of your day? Did it? Let's fix it. Let's make it better.
Maybe let's talk about what you're focusing on right now. For people who want to progress further in their career, or maybe even make a slight shift, maybe from being developers, going more into, you know, customer-facing roles and speaking with people, what would be some advices? How would people need to adjust their, you know, careers or maybe their mindset?
I don't know. I think it's important for a lot of folks to realize many of these things aren't just a inevitable progression. Like you don't have to go from developer to architect. You can be an awesome developer for 30 years and kill it. And that's amazing. And if you do that, that's tremendous. Like do that. I love sometimes seeing like individual contributors who just keep moving up in there and they don't have to become managers. They don't have to become architects. Your job doesn't depend on that. Like when you become a manager, that's not a reward for your years of service. That's a new job. This isn't like sit back and relax. I've made manager. Your job just got harder. So cool. Lean into that. And if you become an architect, if you become a sales engineer, this is a new job. Like, and so as you think of developing those skills, I think if you have a customer mindset, you're in good shape. I think for a lot of folks, the minute you become more customer facing in a, let's say, sales engineer, developer relations, any of these jobs, you also have to become an effective communicator. And that takes lots of forms. Not everyone wants to be verbal communicator. Doesn't matter. You know, if I had to go to a number of countries with my just English background, I would communicate terribly. So that would be awful. So in not every place is it verbal. Sometimes you have to be a good writer. Sometimes you have to be, you know, all sorts of different ways of communicating. We've got people who do things on social media, you know, short bursts. They don't want to write a 1,000-word blog post. They're really good at succinct points, or they're really good at short videos. Other people love doing training classes. So you do develop communication skills, but it's not just how well you speak. And I think that's where some people sometimes think it's just, am I a good talker? Cool, but are you persuasive? Your job is to help someone go to some next step. That's your job. And so are you just helping explain things in a way that they understand, not in a way that makes you feel smart or that you show off? Your job isn't to show off. Your job is to help somebody. And so, all right, how do you communicate putting yourself again back in their shoes of what are the main things I want them to walk away with? Don't stuff it full of everything I know. Stuff it full of things that I want them to think about. Maybe act on, learn more. So I think those are those shifts as you start hitting more customer-facing roles, is you're constantly putting yourself in the, what do I want them to do? How do I steer them towards that next step? How do I kind of persuade them to take action? Because for all of us, the enemy is inertia, right? The enemy is the status quo. Your number one competitor, if you're any vendor, is status quo, because it's so hard to change anything. So if you're talking to a customer, you're an engineer, you're a developer, you're an architect, my job is to reduce your risk, maybe even motivate you to take that next step. And that's not done, again, by showing off or just conveying all the tech. It's by saying, hey, I get this is hard. Here's areas where people stumble. Here's a bunch of ways I've seen that they've gotten past that. You've immediately shown like, hey, I care. I'm trying to help you hit your next step. And so that's a different job than some other ones. And that's cool. So I think just as we started this, just seeing all these things as different jobs. They're not natural progressions. Like you just move from this to this. You have to stop and think about, do I like that? Like that, everything I might have said might sound, you might hear that and go, that sounds awful. Like I hate all of that. Awesome. Do not do that job then, because you'll be really miserable in it.
Exciting news. Level up your CI/CD game with Semaphore. Say hello to the Game Changer, the CI/CD learning tool. It's your personalized roadmap to success. Whether you're a beginner looking to understand the basics of continuous integration or a senior engineer looking to enhance your skills, you will discover ways to improve your productivity as a developer. But wait, there's more. Introducing the Semaphore CI/CD Booster Experience. You'll be guided by our CI/CD engineers with at least 10 years of experience from day one. With this new experience, we want to provide you the fastest path to cut your costs by 50% and improve your productivity at least by a factor of 2x. Head over to semaphoreci.com for more information. And happy building.
As you were speaking about this, one of the main things that came to mind is also speaking to a non-technical people. Because as you said, going through the puzzle of all the technical details is something that, you know, we as engineers just love to do it, dive into, and
And it's still okay to do that in the right audience. But like you just described, look, there's areas where I'm going to make an assumption here. You and I are really dumb. Like there's plenty of things I don't know. millions of topics I have no idea about. And so I just try to remember that, yeah, I might love and know a lot about this topic. The person I'm talking to also knows plenty of things I don't know, and they could make me feel dumb. So let's just have a good conversation between people who are trying to learn more stuff together.
Great. You and your team, if you can give us, a bit of an insight, what's next for you guys? What are your, maybe quarterly or annual plans? What are some stories guys are working on and conveying to your customers and the world?
Yeah, I mean, look, in the cloud industry as a whole, I think for most people, it's been this just like this amazing set of services people get to use individually. And so a lot of cloud providers, us included, think a lot now about end-to-end customer journeys. What does it mean to actually have more of an opinionated view through some of these stacks? Because I don't always just want to walk into the giant shopping mall and have to figure out where I'm supposed to go. Like sometimes I want a more curated path. And so, Google's been doing some great work on simplifying onboarding, simplifying kind of connective tissue between services, because it shouldn't feel so intimidating. It shouldn't feel so overwhelming sometimes. They should be kind of back to being like, this is powerful stuff. Let me help my goal. As we talked about at the very beginning, all of this should be goal-oriented. Absolutely no one wakes up in the morning going, I need to use Kubernetes today. I mean, somebody might somewhere. But what they're probably waking up thinking is, I need a better way to have high-density computing for some of my apps because my stability is not great. My costs are way too high on VMs. I've got to figure out how to run things more efficiently in a better platform. That's the goal. And so as we think through more goal-oriented objectives in the cloud, we're doing a lot of thinking about that and work on that and deliverables on that. And that's what gets, I think, a lot of folks excited because you start to see the bigger picture. Like I love the small picture at times and you build the one thing and that's great. But even CI/CD is a mean to an end. Like CI/CD is awful if there's no target. I mean, the pipeline isn't the goal. That's not my goal. My goal isn't even the destination. It's what did that enable? It's that if my objective is I can fix any customer's P1 bug, P0 bug in 24 hours or less and deploy it, it's a great goal. That's awesome. You don't have to deploy every 10 seconds. You just need to be able to deploy whenever you want to. So you'll have technology that solves it. But you're starting with that kind of end goal, business goal solution in mind. And so a lot of things we work on here, a lot of things our developer advocates and DevRel teams work on is kind of platforms that enable that level of agility, talking to people about that sort of end-to-end solution. What are you trying to accomplish? I think that is a welcome and fresh way to be thinking about cloud computing in particular. Because for the longest time, this has been about what you can do. And to be honest with you, Google's meant to be a little more about who you can be. And I think that's what's important in this next generation of cloud is what am I trying to be? And can I use these technologies to help me be more agile, help me be more customer focused, data driven, delighting people in my user experiences? I think that's what we aspire to, not being really awesome at Linux.
We use Google Kubernetes Engine to run all of our services for maybe last 5 years or so. The best surprise that we have seen is when you bring, a new UI element, which is in the whole Kubernetes engine, which is just, okay, here to simplify things and let us think about some, deep technical details about Kubernetes less. That's immensely helpful for our team. And
The folks, if you're familiar with the analyst firm Red Monk, they're among the best out there. So if you don't work with them, you should. And they said something to me, kind of the best platforms are opinionated, but extensible. And so even when you look at something like GKE, when we do things like Autopilot, which are a fully managed version of Kubernetes, where we do all the day two, the provisioning, the scaling, the patching, it's really remarkable. So an amazing, again, I'm biased, but it seems to be the easiest way to use Kubernetes. That's a very opinionated version of Kubernetes. We've picked all the right sort of security things to turn on. Like it's very, very opinionated. But in some cases, you're going to go, I don't like that. Like I want to set this. I want to pick a different type of base image. I want to do this. And so you have an extensibility option. You can say, no, I'm going to use GKE standard because I want to pick the way my node pools are shaped. I want to change the auto scaling policy. I don't want to pick that. I think more and more we're adopting that mindset of you should have some opinionation because a lot of folks don't know where to start. So yeah, give me your best practice versioned, security hardened, it's scalable by default. Like that's the right way to do it. But don't necessarily constrain me so much where I have no way to extend it because, hey, I want to plug in my own security scanning tool. Don't lock me out of that. Give me an open interface, a plugin. You want to use this? You want to use that? Awesome. But hey, if you really need an opinionated, get it started quickly, just tell me your best stuff. We'll tell you that too. I think that feels like a good future of cloud is more solution oriented, more opinionated, but extensible.
Absolutely. It's not trivial. I want to mention making those opinionated products. Those are absolutely the best. But what we have experienced, the path to those great experiences can be really hard. There are many details to figure out.
Do you on that? I mean, so the hard part with opinionated is by definition, it's taking a point of view. which means there is guaranteed that people won't like that point of view. And so sometimes we always swing the pendulum the other way. This is going to be so open-ended, you can literally do everything. But then that's also super intimidating for another giant population. And so as you look at opinionated, on one hand, people bristle at that. Like, I don't like opinions. I mean, there's always some opinions in here, whether it's yours, mine, someone's. It's got to be somewhere. But how do you approach that? All of this should be driven based, again, on customer data. Hey, what's the common thing most people are doing? That should maybe be the opinion, or, you know, what has worked for years? Let's make that the opinion, not arbitrary.
For the people that want to follow you, learn more about you, what are some pointers that you can share with us?
Yeah, if you'd like to be distracted often, you can follow me on Twitter at rsirother, LinkedIn, things like that. I try to blog. I blog actually every day at sirother.com. I just share what I've read for the day. So I usually read 10, 15 things a day, just articles, blog posts, whatever. And I've just gotten into the habit starting this year of just logging them all every day with a quick summary of why I thought it was interesting. I'm interested in lots of things, just so I at least can kind of be aware of what's going on. Back to our first conversation, I think the secret weapon for most people to have a successful career in tech is to not stop learning things. Doesn't mean you go deep. There's years where I declare bankruptcy on certain topics. I'm not going to pay attention to this year. But then I might dip back in the next year. And so I try to at least maintain a basic knowledge on a lot of things. And then sometimes you dig deep, other times you ignore it.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, that format was, I think, very popular like a decade ago or so, of like curating the content in those pieces. And I appreciate that a lot, but it's maybe me, but maybe die down a bit. So this sounds like I was not aware of that, of your website, and it sounds really exciting. So I'm looking forward to.
I think we lost it a few years ago because even social media kind of replaced some of that. But you also realized, again, everything's a walled garden. Everything's locked into something. But I wanted a little more control over that and more statefulness of it. Because again, social media is a river. Like, you're going to catch what you're going to catch, and you're not going to see everything. It's not stateful the same way. What if you miss something awesome?
Love it. Looking forward to diving into it.
Well, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Thank you for joining us.
What a great conversation. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. Make sure to subscribe to Semaphore Uncut on your podcast player of choice so that you don't miss our new episodes. And stay tuned.